Hi everyone, I'm Jean-Michel and thank you for joining us. And today we will be interviewing a traditional finance player who's taking on the big banks, Mr. Nirav Patel. Mr. Nirav Patel, how are you doing?
Very well, sir, and a pleasure to be here.
And thank you so much for being on the show and taking the time. So let's jump right in. Who are you and what do you do?
Sure, so obviously my name's Nirav. What we do, we're Andaria Financial Services Limited. The acronym EMI, which I'm sure has been branded about a fair bit, stands for Electronic Money Institution. What does that mean? We're essentially within the payment sphere, and that takes a regulated status, probably a tier below what you'd understand as a traditional bank. We're regulated in Malta, regulated in the UK, and really we're offering two services. One, global business accounts, and really to bring in inclusion into the business space, where business is struggling with the traditional incumbents when it comes to banking, payments, and so on. Mm-hmm. So we fill and more than fill a gap there. And we do that with the aim of really democratizing payments. And that's one of our pillars. Okay. Our second pillar is something we call embedded payments or embedded finance. And that's the ability to provide financial services within a non-financial services entity. So let's say, I don't know, loads of people know Facebook, for example. So we integrate our technology into Facebook. Facebook, through that integration, now has the ability to provide payments accounts, virtual IBANs. But when the user of Facebook comes in, it's Facebook powered by Andaria. The difference being that under an agency solution, Facebook would do a lot of the heavy lifting, and we would have a risk that they may do something that's not quite right from a reg perspective. But we address that in this through the technology integration, and we take all the heavy lifting. Therefore, we have the comfort of who the individual is or who the business is. And those are our two pillars.
Absolutely. Okay. So on one hand, you help merchants accept payments online. On the other hand, you sort of help them with virtual bank accounts or dedicated bank accounts.
Exactly.
Virtual IBANs. But you touched on an interesting point, which was the democratization of payments, which is something you don't really hear from a sort of traditional finance player.
No.
Expand on that for me a little bit.
So if you look at the history of where payments are sat, there's arguably three correspondence banks in the world that run the flow of money.
Is it just three?
Arguably, okay. The three big players. You've got Citibank, you've got JP Morgan, Bank of New York. You can see the running theme there. And
Jamie Dimon's always there somewhere, always there.
All US based. And traditionally, it was predicated on through the SWIFT network. Mm-hmm. And how payments have evolved, for example, is now you've got local clearing houses. Not that we've always had those, but now the ability to go and become a member of those local clearing houses allows other incumbents to come into play. But what does that mean? So today, for example, traditionally, you had the three big players. Mm-hmm. In order to make payments anywhere in the globe, these guys were the three that were connected everywhere, right? So if you want to make a payment in US dollar, arguably most of that flows through Citibank, and therefore you've got a layer, but they could therefore dictate pricing, risk appetite, where they send funds, and they were the main player.
Because it was an oligopoly.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And that's evolved through kind of technology evolving. Now, someone like Andaria has the ability to plug in locally to the Central Bank of Malta, for example, and now provide direct SEPA, which now cuts out that middleman, but allows us to set our appetite in terms of the client that we want to onboard. And it allows for that economies of scale from a pricing perspective to be provided down to our clients. Mm-hmm. But also, you're not going now layers beyond. So it allows for the democratization of payments because we're in an instant world now at the same time. So it's been an evolution. And I think it's now even more so with what we're doing from a technology perspective, with where blockchain's coming in. You see that I'm looking at it from a payment sphere. You've now got blockchain looking at it naturally from its own angle through the cryptocurrency route, which is really now changing the game in terms of immediate payment, in terms of from a trail of where the funds, source of funds perspective. Mm. Through the blockchain, you've now got a full audit trail, which is completely changing.
You have the immutability and the transparency and all of that. And it's interesting to see a sort of traditional finance player, sort of, especially one that's, I guess, in some way trying to eat trying to eat banks in their own way, right? It's like EMIs and the blockchain industry are sort of aligned in many ways, at least from a sort of like an ethos perspective, exactly. Which is something I never expected. And how do you see blockchain adding value for you and for your customers?
Sure. So from our perspective, it's an industry that we're tied in from a couple of angles. Number one, from supporting the industry with payments, because it's typically been a pain point within blockchain, within crypto. And I don't want to necessarily align crypto solely with blockchain.
Ooh, that's a whole other interesting conversation.
Because that kind of goes into a whole direction
in
itself.
Yes, it does.
But it's, I think, number one, supporting the industry in its various guises. So be it crypto or be it ledgers and so on and whatever else is happening in that space, it's supporting the industry, number one. So ensuring that we can go and do that. But second, utilizing that framework, so the blockchain, for example, to really push on our ethos of democratizing payment. So an integration, so where a client wants to utilize a blockchain for whatever use case it might be. Let's take insurance, for example. Okay. So there's a great use case there.
I love it. Now we're getting down to specifics.
Yeah,
let's do
exactly.
It.
And again, insurance is an industry that we're supporting, but we also understand, similar to how banking's working, the old insurance and the incumbents there, there's things shifting and changing. And the use of blockchain from a trail perspective and that kind of ultimate source of truth is very valuable.
And so what's the use case exactly, specifically in the insurance industry?
From our perspective, it's quite simple. So say, for example, and again, it's probably more payments than it is blockchain.
Okay, it's fine.
But in that respect, now, individuals who are making high purchases, say, for example, a watch, they essentially underinsure themselves.
Okay.
Because you go to a shop, you go and spend, but arguably your insurance company never really then update your insurance to say, I've gone and made that purchase.
Okay.
So how we do that within an embedded framework is an insurance company has a client, and let's call it yourself. Jean-Michel's a client. He goes to the Rolex shop, buys himself a beautiful Rolex.
It is.
Exactly. And then now that they've seen, so typically high value purchases within a jewelry shop are typically high value single items.
Okay.
And that's kind of by probability, essentially.
Yes.
But now this gives the ability for the insurance company to know that high value purchases have been made.
Yep.
Now they've got the ability within their ecosystem to now offer you to say they understand that you've just made a purchase.
Would you like insurance?
Would you like insurance to cover that?
Ooh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting use case. I think my only question is, would they offer me the insurance price would they offer me insurance cover based on the price I paid retail for the Daytona or market value? Because those are two different points.
That's a good point. But essentially, from an insurance perspective, it's going to be a premium figure, right?
Yeah.
What they probably also have to do, and again, maybe I'm not an insurance guy, but there's probably essentially have to present you what the market rates are, because I don't think they can skew that pricing.
Yeah,
they've got
yeah.
to be within the market range. So there's a case here, there's a case there.
Absolutely. So do you think by integrating blockchain somehow into this process that you can sort of provide a layer of transparency for all parties involved?
Let's think about that, because typically, how did it traditionally work? Someone has a receipt. And they have to hold that receipt. But arguably, I could, if I wanted to defraud the insurer, I could go and, I don't know, take a copy of my friend's receipt, show that to the insurer, look what I've got. So how do you now integrate blockchain into that? So now if at the point of purchase, that can be done utilizing the blockchain, you've got the ultimate source of truth. So you're limiting fraud on one side. You're allowing the insurer to do their piece and get the comfort that they need insuring the product, and ultimately the consumer on the other side, it gets what they need.
Absolutely.
It's a kind of everyone wins situation.
Absolutely. So you see, folks, if more people in the blockchain space actually thought like this, we might have some interesting use cases to play about with, not just Dogecoin shooting up in value and dumping a week later.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But no, that's a great point, actually, and it does essentially democratize the process for everyone involved, right? Which in turn generates more value.
Yes.
throughout the entire value chain.
The ecosystem, right? And I almost think of it as a bit of an ecosystem, because you can arguably pick and drop that, arguably, into any industry.
Yes.
Any industry.
Yes, arguably.
What are pain points within payments, for example? So from a payments point of view, there's the acquiring side. And what I mean is someone goes and uses their card to, I don't know, top up their gaming or gambling account.
Okay.
And then there is the risk now that they charge back.
Yep.
Now that, if you can put that into an ecosystem, underlie it with a blockchain, then again, ultimately you've got a source of truth. They can't then say, no, this wasn't me that made the payment.
Yeah.
So there's an angle there. And again, I'm seeing it more maybe from a fraud perspective and limiting fraud as a kind of data source or the ultimate truth, that ledger of ultimate truth, right?
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. In fact, I think some of the best blockchain use cases I've seen, at least, are ones which involve the tokenization of data rather than tokenization of currency.
Absolutely.
Because don't get me wrong, blockchain has its benefits as far as a currency, but I think that's a sort of small part of the equation, right?
Sure.
And the immutability and the transparency and the traceability part of stuff like we were just discussing.
Yeah.
Is where I think so much value lies with people.
Can I ask a question, if you don't mind? So we touched
on... This is random interviewer,
exactly. But on the flip, so, I mean, FTX, right?
Yeah.
It's been in the news, it's front page. Now, while you say, so public perception, for example, when it comes to the blockchain, you are arguably, again, I say arguably a lot, clearly. you speak to an individual, you say blockchain, their immediate link in their head goes straight to cryptocurrency,
sure,
I'd say. So someone like or the news with FTX, do you feel that has a detrimental impact? Obviously, you being kind of front and center within that blockchain space, does that have a direct impact? Has that been positive from a media point of view? It'd be interesting to understand what the feel from your being in the industry is.
So that's a very fair question, and I think it all depends on your perspective.
Okay.
So from a micro perspective, yes, the impact has been huge.
Okay.
Many people are afraid of anything crypto and NFT related now.
Yeah.
In my opinion, is a good thing, because living in a reality where a JPEG sells for 25 million is not a world I want to live in.
Yeah.
And we did that for 2.5 years, and finally that part of this industry is over. So that's great.
Apart from Elon Musk, maybe he wants to.
But Elon Musk is doing it right. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with NFTs. Like, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with tech. I believe tech is entirely agnostic. It's the application which defines the use case, and that defines whether something is inherently good or bad.
Yeah.
So the way Elon is doing it is, hey, listen, there's a bazillion bots on my platform.
Yeah.
How do I give the public a way to make sure that for them to be able to verify whether an individual account is a bot. And using an NFT is a fantastic fun way to do it.
That's a nice use case.
And it doesn't need to cost 25 mil, $5. Take a JPEG, man,
and
you're good. Yeah, you know what I mean? Or just like tie into Midjourney or something and do the whole like $10 for 100 images, and you're set.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's where the value is.
Okay. That's interesting.
Although from a micro perspective, I think it was a bad thing. From a macro perspective, I think it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it's just another culling cycle, right? Like, I mean, in the 90s, the internet was good for pretty much pornography and Viagra, and that's about it. No, and now we've gotten to a place where we can finally order food from someone we've never met, have it cooked by someone we've never met, have it delivered by someone we've never met, without ever giving them any physical money.
Yeah.
And that's just the sort of culmination of multiple iterations, right? So I'm very curious and keen to see where this is going to go. But back to you.
Yeah, sure.
Where do you see the future of convergence of EMIs and blockchain?
Sure. I mean, again, so being in the payment space, I think it's the utilization of blockchain. So be it one of the major coins, and again, Ethereum, Bitcoin, whichever one that may be, and I think it will be one of the two, mm-hmm. that essentially becomes the payment rails.
Okay.
And what do I mean by payment rails? So essentially today, the way money is transferred, it's essentially the central banks of this world. So it's fully centralized, right? So and blockchain is the antithesis of that,
yes.
which is completely decentralized. And again, in between all of that, you've got the central bank digital currencies, which is arguably doing the reverse, but that's a whole nother...
It's like Antichrist.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Anathema.
So from our perspective, again, what's our biggest pain point is essentially ensuring that we keep fraud down to a minimum, that payments and the validation of payments works efficiently. Blockchain for me, and through the utilization of blockchain for a fiat in and a fiat out on the other side, and that in-between rail essentially being the blockchain, allows for payments to become instant. And not just euro, like SEPA instant, for example, which is just euro-based. This is now any currency globally allows for you to have instant settlement. The minute you've got that globally, we are true. I mean, we've talked about globalization as a human race, if you like, for years and years. But this, for me, fully democratized. So you could be, I don't know, a little tin pot shop in the Philippines, for example, and now have the ability, number one, through the internet to sell your product anywhere in the world. But typically, what are the pain points here? It's an underbanked economy, you struggle to get a bank account, and the bank account that you do get doesn't facilitate the payments that you need. That's where I see it going. So it's fully democratization of a global economy. Now, whether you want to buy something from a shop in the Philippines, completely down to you. But the fact that you've got the ability to go and do that, how that will evolve, only time will tell.
Mm.
You overlay all of that with the metaverse. Again, that's a whole nother angle to go down. But it's I'm seeing it become kind of a single ecosystem and this reliance moving away from decentralization. The roadblocks will continue to be the roadblocks. I don't see kind of fiat or the traditional fiat routes closing down. But the fact that you have this additional route that's essentially less painful, instant, you're essentially receiving your money instantly.
Mm.
And those are pain points within a myriad of industries.
Mm. So I think a really good analogy to what you just said, so this is a beautiful summary, which is when, as soon as commercial aviation became accessible to the world,
yeah.
It didn't destroy the rail industry.
Exactly.
It just created a specialization,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And different aspects of technology are goods for different solutions.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Mr. Patel, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you.